Good evening. Welcome to the County of San Luis Obispo Health Commission. We call the meeting to order. I'm the Vice Chair, Jane Raymond. The first order of business is the approval of the May 13th minutes. Does anyone have any additions or corrections? There was a space there left as far as the signing this commitment letter the organization commits to enter into. I think that was the agreed upon change or addition. Is there any other addition? So, Teresa, you can enter them into the for them to be reviewed and put on the website. Okay, now the public comment. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to make a public comment? Does it look like we have anyone in the audience? So we can start into our presentation tonight. We're looking at breastfeeding, and we have a number of presenters here tonight. We'll be starting with Dawn Wilt, and she works with the Public Health Department as a nutritionist. And welcome.
All right, well, I'd like to thank the commission for inviting us to speak tonight about breastfeeding. It certainly is a passion for a lot of us, and it's really nice to be able to brag about what this county is doing. So mentioned, my name is Dawn Wilt. I'm a registered dietitian as well as an international board certified lactation consultant. I've been employed with the WIC program for 30 years now. And for the last 18 years of my career, I've been funded either partially or in whole by First Five. In those 18 years, I've been breastfeeding educator, breastfeeding coordinator, peer counselor coordinator, and the last 2.5, 3 years, I have been the lactation consultant for WIC. Our county is very fortunate that its size has allowed the breastfeeding advocates to be collaborative in our efforts to support mothers who wish to provide breast milk for their infants. And my peers that are here will elaborate a little bit more on that. So I provided some data for you that was obtained from the newborn screening questionnaires that all hospitals are required to administer. The California WIC Association, as well as the University of Davis Human Lactation Center, takes these numbers and then puts them into a very nice, readable user format. Based on the 2017 data, San Luis Obispo County is ranked 5th in the state for its exclusive breastfeeding rates in the hospital, which is quite an honor. We have dropped from 4th, but we're still maintaining a very high level of breastfeeding in the hospitals. French and Sierra Vista are ranked in the top 12% in the state, and Twin Cities is just barely under the 85%. They're at 83.3% for exclusive breastfeeding rates. Both Sierra Vista and French Hospital exceed the 85% for exclusive breastfeeding rates in the hospital, which is phenomenal. All three of our hospitals have achieved a baby-friendly status. It's an optional designation for hospitals to obtain, and Mary Lee will speak a little bit more to that. Baby-friendly initiative is administered by the World Health Organization and the United Nations Children's Fund, or UNICEF. It was created in 1991 to promote practices that support a mother's decision to breastfeed. In 1998, our general hospital was the 13th baby-friendly hospital in the U.S. Today, there are over 500-plus baby-friendly hospitals in the United States, and the facilities are reevaluated every 5 years. So once they obtain the status, they have lots of things they need to do to stay current with that. To earn the status, the hospital has to pass a rigorous audit. It involves the hospital being able to provide what's called 10 steps. So the hospitals have to have a written breastfeeding policy that's routinely communicated to all staff. They train all health staff in skills needed to implement the policy, inform all pregnant women about the benefits and management of breastfeeding, help mothers initiate breastfeeding within 1 hour of birth, show moms how to breastfeed, maintain lactation if separated from their infants, give infants no other food or drink unless medically indicated, practice rooming in, which means no more newborn nurseries, encourage breastfeeding on demand, so no schedules. No pacifiers or artificial nipples are to be given to breastfed infants. So many of these babies, if they do require any supplement, usually get syringe fed. while they're in the hospital. They're also, the hospitals are required to foster the establishment of breastfeeding support groups or refer them out upon hospital discharge. And I believe Mary Lee will speak a little bit more to that as well. Historically, our county has had strong breastfeeding rates with all three hospitals baby-friendly. Our moms are even more supported in their decision to breastfeed. And I think we are the only county in the state that has all of our delivery hospitals as baby-friendly. So we're very proud of that, that they've achieved that. So San Luis County WIC has had a good breastfeeding history due to the great support our moms get in the hospital. In 2001, WIC started a breastfeeding peer counselor program with the help of First Five Funds, and it was called the BABES Grant. The funds not only provided for the peer counselors, but it also provided for a bilingual, bicultural IBCLC to go out into our clinics to provide services to our non-English speaking moms. Initially, the peer counselors were WIC participants, but as the program evolved and developed, we have WIC staff that now fill that obligation, and they're very proud to do that. Currently, WIC funds two of our breastfeeding peer counselors, and First Five funds the third peer counselor full-time. All the peer counselors are bilingual and bicultural, and of the moms they support, 67% of them are still breastfeeding at 6 months. When we compare that information to other peer counseling and other WIC programs in the state, we're double. They're around 30% are still breastfeeding at 6 months. So we're very proud of our peer counselors and what they do. Last August, our peer counselors were recognized by the Central Coast Breastfeeding Coalition for the support they provide to our moms, and it was a huge kudos to them to have them recognized by the coalition. The education that they provide to moms, they do it in a variety of ways. Oftentimes, it's face-to-face when they come into their WIC appointment. They are the WIC participants, WIC staff person to go to. If they're not able to make contact with them or need to make more frequent contact, they use telephone calls, and we also have a text messaging system that we've utilized. The text messaging system has educational messages built into it that was developed by Santa Barbara County WIC program, and so as soon as moms are enrolled in WIC, they're enrolled in the text messaging, and then they have a really easy way to communicate with their peer counselors because some of them don't work in the same office every single day they travel around. So we do this all through our computers, and it's very effective in reaching moms. So when we look at WIC moms getting basic WIC services and compare them to the WIC moms that get peer counseling services, the basic WIC moms, are 52% of them are still breastfeeding at 6 months, which is really good. But the peer counselor moms, 67% of them are still breastfeeding at 6 months. So we know that the peer support really, really makes a difference for our moms. Who gets peer counselor support? Our WIC-funded peer counselors, their scope of practice is for first-time moms, so they target first-time moms and hoping that they are successful for the first time around. Then the second time around, they'll be much more successful. And then our First Five-funded peer counselor, she's with our travel site, and she travels around to our six different sites that we go to. And she, anybody that wants help, she provides assistance to. Recently, we had five WIC staff go through UC San Diego's, let me get this right, Certified Lactation Educator Counselor Training. So the three peer counselors, and we had two WIC staff that wanted to do it as well. So we have five staff that are now gone through some additional extra training to do support for our moms. So we're hoping good things come from that. In addition to the peer counselors, WIC provides a lactation consultant, at five WIC sites weekly. To assist moms with breastfeeding difficulties outside the scope of the peer counselor. So it usually is dealing with sore nipples, milk supply, milk transfer issues, and poor weight gain. And yes, I do speak enough Spanish to get by. And if I get in trouble, then I have my peer counselors to call upon. WIC also has a breast pump loan program to provide moms with both a clinical grade and rental grade pumps to help maintain their milk supply if they're having difficulties or if they need to return to work or school. Our pumps come with a variety of options. We have some pumps that can just plug into the power outlet in the vehicle. We have other pumps that have an internal battery. So for moms that are working in non-traditional work environments and don't have a place to pump or at least plug in, they've got a pump with a battery. And although the health insurances will provide breast pump to the moms, what we found is that moms that are pump dependent or use a pump quite heavily, these insurance provided pumps usually don't hold up for the long run. So oftentimes we convert them over to one of our WIC pumps. And we have 150 plus pumps, so which is a lot of pumps for our size of WIC program. And most of them are in use all of the time. So just in closing, basic WIC services for breastfeeding include education to the mom prenatally. We usually try and have a conversation with her somewhere in her first or second trimester about just general infant feeding, any concerns they may or may not have about breastfeeding, what they've heard, what they haven't heard, and give them information to help dispel some of the myths they may have come across. Then we also do a best breastfeeding basics type of class, helping the moms with latching. We do a basic latch on and how to tell if their baby's getting enough. Because one of the biggest concerns moms have is, am I making enough milk and is my baby eating enough? Little closer to delivery, we do something called baby behavior with moms, where we go through and just talk about normal baby behavior. This came out of a project done through UC Davis, and they discovered moms tend to wean from breastfeeding because they don't understand normal baby behavior. So we talk about hunger cues, we talk about sleep, the frequency of needing to wake up. We also talk about crying and fullness cues for the babies. So that is it. I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
I just have one question. You had mentioned that there are 6 sites, and then there's 5 WIC sites. Are they the same, or?
We have.
What are the sites? I know the hospitals.
So we have site Napomo, Grover Beach, San Luis, Atascadero, Morro Bay, Paso Robles, and Cambria. So there's 7 sites. I go to 5 of them, because there's only one of me and 5 days in a week. So I go to one of them. And then I don't cover San Luis because we have the breastfeeding clinic through French Hospital. We also have Andrea Heron, who has Growing with Baby. She's a lactation consultant in private practice. So we feel that there's services available in San Luis. And I don't go to Cambria because any given time we might have 1 or 2 pregnant women. So oftentimes the Cambria moms will come down to Morro Bay if they really need help, or they'll go over to Paso Robles if they really need help.
Any other questions?
You mentioned some interesting statistics. 60% are still breastfeeding at 6 months, mm-hmm. I believe. Is there any difference in terms of ethnicity of the mothers at that point?
I'm sure there is. I don't have that breakdown with me. Many times our Hispanic families will choose to combination feed, so they are doing some breastfeeding. They're not exclusive at 6 months. So that 60% is any breastfeeding, so it's a combination of exclusive breastfeeding and what we call combination breastfeeding, where they're supplementing with some formula. Many of our Hispanic families do work in agriculture, and they find it very challenging to pump in agricultural work sites. Not only are they out in the field, but my understanding from some of my peers in other parts of the county is that the agricultural workers are afraid to ask their bosses for anything that might be perceived as special, that they're getting special treatment for the boss, so therefore they need to maybe do special favors for the boss. So they tend to not want to be singled out.
That's kind of grim.
It is. It is very grim. Yeah.
Very grim. Thank you.
Uh-huh, you're welcome.
Okay. Thank you very much on that. I just wanted to put a shout out for the breast pumps and the fact that you guys provide those. I know that was really important to my granddaughter when she had to go back to work and dad was home taking care of the baby, but they wanted to make sure that he was able to always have the breast milk, and it wouldn't have been possible without the pumps.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
we're
so
very proud of our pumps.
That's a great service.
So, thank you. Okay, thank you.
I have a quick question for you, actually.
Okay.
Can you speak a little bit about some of the work that's being done in the county for policies that are supporting this, whether it's also in the workplace or other policies that keep these percents on track, because they are fantastic?
I That's going to be more of a coalition thing. Certainly when women are returning back to work and they have concerns about pumping in the workplace, we do inform them that it is their right to pump in the workplace, and we really encourage them to talk to their human resources person. Sometimes the frontline supervisors really don't know what the law is because they haven't had a lot of experience with it, but the human resources do. And if the mom's having any difficulties, we'd be happy to call human resources on behalf of the mom. Don't tend to do that because that's breaking confidentiality with the WIC participant, which, you know, we're not allowed to do. But we try and give them information and arm them the best we can with their rights to pump. And sometimes they choose to find other jobs or find a way to make it work. So a lot of times employers are somewhat supportive of that. So thanks.
Jean? I had one other comment, too, when you were talking about the very last program that you're doing and talking with them about babies and what mm-hmm. to expect. I was surprised at how much has changed, but family dynamics have changed. And, you know, a lot of times when I was a kid, you always had cousins and siblings and other babies around, so you just... You know, you got that opportunity to understand what was regular baby behavior. And now that families have changed the dynamics so much, and there might be 5 or 10 years between children, mm-hmm. That's really a needed resource because sometimes it's pretty surprising that there were people that never babysat a child. They didn't even know what to do with a baby.
Right.
And that seems odd, but it's the norm today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. And we make these pamphlets available to the hospitals. Anybody that wants them, all they need to do is request, and we will provide the baby behavior pamphlets with them for them, and it's not a problem. So, yeah, it was a great thing UC Davis did.
Oh, one other question,
sure.
Just as an addition to that one. The hospitals have programs before birth as far as what to expect, and then they have you as part of it as one of the resources. Is that correct?
As far as I know, yes, it is. And, if families are applying for Medi-Cal, they're supposed to be given information about WIC. If somebody is a comprehensive perinatal services provider, meaning they take Medi-Cal for pregnancy, they're supposed to refer to WIC. But I think one of the challenges that we have is over the last probably 5 years or so, we're getting less and less prenatal women coming in early on in their pregnancy. They're coming in much, much later, so it's a lot more challenging to do the education when they're not there, or they show up the month that they're due to deliver, or they, you know, supposedly don't know about us, and we're getting referrals from the hospital because they need help with breastfeeding or they need a breast pump and they can't get one because they weren't enrolled in services. So,
so CHC, what's your relationship with them?
They're aware of us, and they're supposed to be referring. I know some of the CHC offices seem to be very good about referring. I don't know what kind of follow-up they give. It's one thing to hand a mom a piece of paper and say, hey, you need to look into this program, and another thing, hey, did you follow up with them? Clients will sometimes get frustrated with us because we don't have someone to answer the phone. We have two sites that are what we call permanent sites, and so we do have staff that will answer the phone if they're not otherwise occupied with someone. But we, with this texting program they do, they can text in a request, hey, I'd like to get a WIC appointment, and they'll get a text back. Oftentimes our challenges are when we call people back, their voicemail box is not set up. Voicemail box is full. They're not accepting calls at this time. So it's sometimes it's really hard because our clients are difficult to get a hold of. But the texting seems to really have helped a lot do that. And then there also, too, there's a huge fear. This is a little off topic. But with the whole public charge that was the Trump administration was looking at last fall, WIC was in the preliminary discussions as being part of that public charge, and so we had people reporting churches were telling them not to apply for WIC. We had Spanish-speaking radio stations telling them don't come in and apply for food coupons, which WIC is not part of that. So it's really hard to combat that, to have a Caucasian person telling them, no, it's fine, and they really don't believe you. So another challenge we have. So, anyways, all right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next speaker is Marilee Costello, and she's Central Coast Breastfeeding Coalition. And she's going to give next. Are you going to go to? Oh, handouts. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Marilee Costello, and I'm happy to be here representing the Central Coast Breastfeeding Coalition. I wanted to give you a little bit of background about myself, and then I'll talk about the coalition, but I was past president of the coalition. The coalition's been going for 8 years in this county, and we are very proud of our accomplishments in these 8 years. We're completely a volunteer organization and have, as I'll highlight, done a significant amount of contributions to promoting breastfeeding in our county. I am an RN and an international board certified lactation consultant. I received my bachelor's at the University of San Francisco, and I worked initially at UCSF, and then I moved across the bay and started focusing in maternity services at Alta Bates Medical Center. My husband works in agriculture, so after 4 years at Alta Bates, we moved to Fresno, and I had the opportunity for 9 years to work at St. Agnes Hospital, and worked with a very different population, as you can imagine, between the Bay Area and the Central Valley. It definitely broadened my understanding of women's challenges and what they are up against when they're trying to breastfeed. So after working at St. Agnes in 2001, we moved back to San Luis Obispo, and I was happy to move back because I went to San Luis High, and it was great to be back in the neighborhood. So I really care about the women of the county, not just representing the hospital where I work. I want to make that very clear, and I think it's really a county obligation to try to promote breastfeeding services for the women of our county. So for the past 10 years, I've been at French, and I work at inpatient there in the hospital, seeing moms and babies after their babies are delivered, and I work in the outpatient services with Olga Miralles, where we see moms postpartum who have left the hospital and come back to receive lactation services, and Olga's going to talk a little bit more about what's involved with that, but an extremely important part of helping breastfeeding women is follow-up following discharge. From hospital. We have tremendous rates in our county for initiation in the hospitals, but it doesn't matter if you go home and there's no help. So particularly for first-time mothers, there is a tremendous amount of teaching that we provide. So anyway, back to the Central Coast Breastfeeding Coalition. What happened 8 years ago is we were realizing that we were kind of, in terms of the three hospitals in the county, we were islands unto ourselves as far as the lactation services that we were providing, and running more in a competitive kind of corporate model rather than collaboration. So an RN who was working at Sierra Vista, Pamela Paul, and myself and several other people started the Central Coast Breastfeeding Coalition. So our coalition is part of the California Breastfeeding Coalition, and the California Breastfeeding Coalition works at a state level to promote breastfeeding throughout the state. And so we're one of the counties, county coalitions, and it's really great because in California, there's 52 county coalitions. So out of our 58 counties, this is a very wonderful place to be for breastfeeding mothers. So there's a lot of support, not just in the hospital and the healthcare system, but also beyond through these coalitions. So I want to give you a little idea of what our coalition has done. We work to bring together a diverse group of people in our community to promote, support, and educate regarding breastfeeding. We currently have 40 active members and a couple hundred people on our mailing list. Our membership is made up of international board certified lactation consultants like the three of us, and also other people from WIC, people from La Leche League, and individuals from private practice. Our membership includes physicians, dietitians, a Cal Poly professor who specializes in infant feeding, who we collaborate with, and also an occupational therapist who is here in San Luis Obispo, who works specifically in infant feeding. We also have mothers from the community who want to participate. Our current the woman who's running the coalition, has an MBA, and she studied dairy science at Cal Poly. And I helped her breastfeed 10 years ago, and she just woke up to the field of lactation, and she's been running our coalition for the last 6 years. We also have members from business. Annie Wu from MindBody, who's one of the corporate leaders over there, has been very involved in the coalition and actually made a substantial contribution that helped us do some of the projects that I'm going to tell you about. So I wanted to talk about how we fit in as far as who our umbrella organization is. We are part of the Center for Family Strengthening, and we're called a project under the Center for Family Strengthening. So we work closely with Lisa Frazier, and she has helped us get the not-for-profit status that we needed to take us to the next level. We also have Wendy Wendt from First Five attends a number of our meetings as well, and collaboratively, all these different folks come together. We have monthly meetings wherein we discuss the community projects that we put our minds to. We put on education events for our members in the community. We go to local birth and baby fairs. And then I'm going to highlight some of our bigger projects. Some of our accomplishments over the past 8 years. I'm going to start by talking about promoting lactation spaces in the hospital. Excuse me, in businesses. We need to promote them better in the hospital too, because we're not very good at lactation spaces for our nurses, but that's another story. But I'm talking about in workplaces within San Luis Obispo County. So we're very proud that in 2014 we nominated MindBody for a statewide award to highlight their lactation accommodations for their working moms. And the California Breastfeeding Coalition gives out three or four awards to different people from around the state to acknowledge their lactation services. For example, University of California, Irvine won 1 year. So MindBody actually won in 2014, and Annie Wu from MindBody went up to Sacramento and received her award for the wonderful work she did there to create lactation spaces for their employees. It's actually a model for other businesses, what they've accomplished there. In 2016, we nominated Diablo Canyon because Kristen Zaitz, who's a nursing mom and engineer out there, went to just great lengths to develop two fantastic spots over at Diablo where those women who are working out there can go and pump. And I've had the pleasure to work with a lot of those women in the clinic, helping them navigate going back to work and breastfeeding. It's not easy when you work out at Diablo and have to go through all the security checks and all this, you know, to be able to continue lactation. But they've been very successful, so they won the state award in 2016. In 2017, we put on a conference at the Cliffs in Shell Beach, which featured an international recognized leader in the field of human lactation. Paula Meyer came from Rush University in Chicago and put on a day-long conference for 140 health professionals from throughout California. And those professionals were able to receive their continuing education units and learn about what Paula specializes in, which is the field of the importance of breast milk for premature infants. So she's a doctor in nursing science and is a major contributor to that field and publishes a lot. And so we had a really successful conference. 140 people came and we had a great time. It was a beautiful setting, nice lunch. Everybody wanted to come back, you know, another time to come to the Central Coast for another event like that. It was a beautiful day in May. In addition to that, annually we put on a Mother's Milk Drive. And this happens every October, and it's been very successful. In California, there's one facility in San Jose called the San Jose Mother's Milk Bank. And they, for 30 years, have collected human milk, and they pasteurize it in a special process and make sure that every mother donating doesn't have communicable diseases that would be a concern. And then they distribute that milk to high-risk infants and children throughout the state. So, for example, at Stanford University, all of the babies in their growing premature nurseries receive mother's milk. If the mothers cannot provide their own milk, they get it from San Jose Mother's Milk Bank. So what we do in October, we rotate this between the three hospitals. So last year, two years ago, it was at French, and then it's been at Twin, and it's been at Sierra. And we advertise a lot, and then moms come in and bring their milk. And they either donate at the time and get their labs drawn, or else they can get their labs drawn and then make an agreement with the Mother's Milk Bank to ship their milk up to San Jose, their frozen milk. And the best story is, when we did this the first year we were at Sierra, so there we are, you know, 10 till 4 on a Tuesday, and moms are coming in, and they're bringing their milk. And towards the end of that day, a mother brought in two or three coolers. I'm not kidding.
Totes,
okay, of her breast milk. She had driven over from Bakersfield. She had heard about our milk drive. She had had a baby in a premature nursery in Bakersfield and was so motivated to share her milk. She brought over 1,000 ounces of her breast milk. So it's really a labor of love, this idea, but we love supporting it and are invigorated by the moms in the community who participate. And I'm going to wrap it up real soon, but I did want to talk about one other significant event that we just put on. And in over 5 days between March and April, we put on the continuing certified lactation education counselor program at French and Sierra. We split it between the two sites. And what this is it's a program through the University of California, San Diego. A wonderful woman who's a leader in breastfeeding named Ginny Baker came and gave a 5-day conference about breastfeeding for people who are kind of a little bit beyond entry-level interest in breastfeeding. So we had 50 seats, and we're very happy because we filled all 50 with members of the community. So we had folks from WIC, we had nurses from hospitals, we had doulas, we had interested mothers, all kinds of people. And so for 5 days, they came and listened to topics related to breastfeeding. And you think, gosh, how long can you talk about breastfeeding? Well, really, that's just the icing on the cake. But it was really great because at French, we had a number of nurses retiring a few years ago, and they decided instead of taking any kind of gifts, that they wanted the gifts given to them to be a donation to a scholarship fund. And with that scholarship fund, we provided scholarships for 5 members of our community to go to this CLEC course. So they were all WIC gals, right? Right? So the 5 who got the scholarships came from WIC. So instead of paying the $600 tuition, we were able to facilitate their attendance by providing those scholarships. So that just happened. It was really successful, and we're just going to keep on. That's what we do at the Central Coast Breastfeeding Coalition. So thank you for your time. I gave you guys 2 handouts. One is a beautiful website that's been developed because of our affiliation with Mind Body, and our current president, Leslie Mahegan, who's very good at graphics. We have a beautiful website that you guys are welcome to look at, and it links up to the California Breastfeeding Coalition and has all kinds of information for moms that we update constantly related to breastfeeding. And then in addition to that, I brought, because I ran the redesignation process at French Hospital for the baby-friendly redesignation. We were initially designated baby-friendly in 2012, and then in 2017, we had to go through redesignation. So what does that mean? Frankly, my supervisor at French said the process is more involved than a JACO visit at the hospital. And that's not an exaggeration. I spent 3 months working full-time to prepare for that and getting the staff up to speed and the pharmacy and the person who purchases formula and on and on and on. So I just want to give you this little pamphlet because what is most significant, it talks about the 10 steps that a hospital has to go through. These are international steps developed by the World Health Organization. And on the second page at the bottom, I either put a star or else it's circled, where it talks about the importance of baby friendly. So what it says is the U.S. Infant Feeding Practices Survey conducted by the CDC and the FDA found that mothers who received none of the 10 steps were 8 times more likely to have discontinued breastfeeding by 6 weeks, compared with moms who experienced at least 6 of those steps. The steps most likely to increase breastfeeding beyond 6 weeks were initiation breastfeeding within the first hour, giving only breast milk, and not using pacifiers. So that doesn't sound like it means a lot, but actually if you change those practices in a hospital, you change the breastfeeding stats in the state, in the county, in the country. And what we found in, and I've learned through the California Breastfeeding Coalition, is what drives breastfeeding rates in the world is bringing up the people at the bottom. So it's bringing up the people who have limited resources, doing the things like WIC does to support those moms who don't have anything. That's what boosts our stats, because intelligent women currently in America, right? We all want to breastfeed, right? And we have the means and the support to do it. But supporting those who don't have the means is what's going to improve breastfeeding currently. So that's it. Do you guys have any questions?
I love your enthusiasm. This is one of my favorite subjects. I have 3 healthy adult children who were breastfed and 2 grandchildren that were breastfed. So yeah, this is very close to my heart. One of the things that I wanted to ask about, because you work with mothers postpartum, is whether you are able to identify and intervene when a mother is going through postpartum depression, and what are the steps that you go through?
Well, that's a great question, because, you know, it's your county Department of Public Health that's been leading the way with us learning about PMAD, postpartum mood and anxiety disorder. So, who's the wonderful woman in charge of maternal and infant health?
Sandy,
okay? Sandy has just, and Kathy Gremmel, who sadly enough passed away, did a phenomenal job to educate us in the hospitals regarding PMAD. And then they had a conference last June at a Cuesta 2-day conference on postpartum mood and anxiety and depression. At French, we're in the process of developing a postpartum mother support group specifically for PMAD. Frankly, our work in the outpatient services, because inpatient, they get identified and then a social worker sees them. So then when they come to us, the breastfeeding center, that is one of the main things we're working on. You know, I just was listening to a talk today. You know, if a mother's depressed, she's not going to breastfeed. So what we do at the breastfeeding center is figure out ways to support her and help her get realizing her resources, get connected with community postpartum support groups, for example, and we follow those people really closely. Those are some of the people who come back again and again because they love the support so much, and thankfully, through the community foundation at French, they're supporting our work to support those moms, and we do have screening tools in the hospital and at the clinic. So, that's probably the number 2 thing that we do besides help babies breastfeed is help mothers navigate the postpartum time, because 15 to 20% of moms have some kind of postpartum depression and anxiety. So we're waking up to that and doing our best to support those moms. Nice question. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And the other question I had to do is more specifically to the county. You talked about the baby-friendly facilities or nursing facilities.
In the workplaces?
The lactation spaces. Sorry.
Right.
Do you have any efforts going on within the county government itself?
You know, we haven't, as a coalition, reached out to the county to work on that. We'd be happy to do that and educate and make alliances. We have reached out to the airport because a lot of moms are traveling, right? And we have this beautiful facility. We've reached out to the Children's Museum and made a lactation space there. But anything you want to share with me regarding the county and helping improve lactation spaces? I had a daughter at UC Davis and every single building on campus that's a large educational facility has a lactation space. UC Berkeley, same thing. We've worked with Cal Poly, and they are coming along. They have a ways to go. They used to have two lactation services when I started trying to help at HR, and now I think they have six. But it's a campus of 40,000 people, right? So between those who work there and the students, anyway, the numbers are huge. So we're working on Cal Poly, but I'd be happy to share information and collaborate with the county. Yeah. We want every mom to be able to continue going to work. There's all kinds of statistics that support the dedication of employees who are allowed to breastfeed. And it's cheaper for the employer to continue supporting their moms rather than retrain somebody else, obviously. So, yeah. All right. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And our last presenter is Olga Morales. And she works at French Hospital and their breastfeeding center.
Can I stand to the side? Because you won't see. Well, you will, huh? Oh, God, I thought I was going to be down here. You can see me. Yeah, thank you. I know, huh? I thought I was going to have to go that one. Okay. Well, good evening. Just want to tell you a little bit about myself. I've lived in San Luis Obispo County for 45 years. I received my nursing degree from Cuesta College in 79. And my IBC certification from the UCL Extension Program in 2004. After I graduated from nursing school, I worked at General Hospital in the medical surgical floor for 10 years. And then I stayed there because I liked it at General. And I worked in the OB unit breastfeeding clinic until it closed in 2003. I currently work at Dignity Health French Hospital Breastfeeding Clinic. Coming from a family of migrant field workers who did not speak English, I find myself especially drawn to assisting our Spanish-speaking moms in our county. All of the hospitals here, like the girls mentioned, have their unique services providing support and how they promote breastfeeding. So I'm here to talk to you about how French Hospital, what we do to support and promote breastfeeding for our mommies. First of all, we have what we call the breastfeeding warm line. And this warm line was established in 1982 at General Hospital. This warm line is a triage phone service where moms can call with any concerns regarding breastfeeding every day of the year. Calls are answered from 9 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon by one of our lactation nurses. And if necessary, we schedule them an appointment in the breastfeeding clinic. We have a Spanish line and we have an English line in order to serve the needs of the breastfeeding women in our county. They don't have to be a French client to utilize the warm line. We return calls. We get about 175 calls per month. And this is a card that we hand out to our pediatricians and our OBs. We do it all year round. The main thing about the warm line that I'm really impressed is that we did this warm line calls free of, we didn't get paid for doing this for years. We just got started getting reimbursed or getting paid a little bit for doing it, and we do it every day, and even on holidays, and I even had to do it on my vacation days, or just because nobody else was available to take the warm line sometimes. So it just it shows the passion that we have for our job. In regards to our in-hospital breastfeeding services, let me give you a brief history. In the fall of 1997, several nurses from General Hospital moved across the street and helped begin the Family Birthing Center at French Hospital. We strive to meet the needs of women from the prenatal period through their hospital stay and beyond, and are available throughout their breastfeeding journey. Prenatal breastfeeding classes are taught, and prenatal visits are offered through our breastfeeding clinic. We offer a one-on-one consultation to address any questions, provide information, and conduct a breastfeeding assessment to address possible concerns and implement strategies. It has been our assessment that women who have been seen prenatally seem to have a better breastfeeding outcome. We just finished a study with Cal Poly where our hypothesis was that we think that if moms are seen prenatally and we assess that anatomy-wise, they might be at a higher risk for having breastfeeding problems or challenges. We want to be able to educate medical professionals for them to be on the outlook for these problems. And our study went very well. We just finished it, and we're compiling all the statistics right now. But, we've came up with some good findings. So hopefully we can put it together. While the mom is in the hospital, inpatient lactation services are offered 7 days a week, and IBCLC works for an hour with each mother every day during her hospital stay. Sierra Vista, Twin Cities, and French Hospital all provide these services, which makes our county very unique. And by the way, French Hospital was ranked number 2 for initiation rates in the state of California in 2017. So very proud of that. Currently in the county, there are 3 outpatient clinics in addition to WIC that provide lactation services after the hospital stay. For over 30 years, Andrea Heron, a pediatric nurse practitioner, and an IBCLC has provided private outpatient services in San Luis Obispo. Twin Cities provides outpatient lactation services on-site as well as French Hospital. The French Breastfeeding Center began at General Hospital in 1980. In 2001, CHC took over the breastfeeding clinic, and in 2007, French agreed to incorporate the breastfeeding center into the OB education department. At the breastfeeding clinic, we see approximately 100 baby mommy dyads per month. Moms come in from all over the Central Coast, from Lompoc to King City, for one-hour consultations with an IBCLC. We see all kinds of problems, from sore nipples, from low milk supply, from helping moms that have a Down syndrome baby, to cleft palate babies, to premature babies. We provide bilingual, bicultural services and extended clinic hours as necessary to meet the individual needs of the families coming to us for assistance. That's it. Thank you. Any questions?
Any questions?
Did I hear you say that every new mom gets an hour per day of one-on-one
in the
hospital?
Mm-hmm.
That's really impressive.
Yeah, it's frankly what it takes. By the time that you establish rapport, watch your feeding, which can take an hour.
Excuse me. No, I get it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, if you look at the Journal of Human Lactation, I think they're suggesting a half an hour per patient. But we thankfully have dodged that. And I know, frankly, having done this for more than 20, almost 30 years, that a mom needs about an hour spent with her individual consultant to really establish a rapport, watch a feeding, which takes around a half an hour, and establish a feeding plan or reassure or educate. That, in my opinion, is the minimum. And sometimes if it's a mom who's doing great, maybe she has another child, you know, you get 15 minutes with her, and then you get an hour and 45 minutes with the mom who everything's fallen apart and she's a first-time mom. So we average it, but we're proud, very proud that we can continue to do that because that's what drives those breastfeeding rates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The breastfeeding clinic, it takes us at least an hour. We spend an hour with each mommy, at least.
But, you know, it also sounds like a great entry point into all these other services.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Precisely. Yeah, we're
it's terrific.
We're liaisons to a lot of a lot of parts of the network that is necessary to make us a successful start with moms and babies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just want to add something as an employee of French Hospital and had done case management to see the staff. It's really a team to see the lactation there and everyone working together. It's the nurses reinforcing it after you leave. What times do you normally try to target new mothers? How long after birth? Just immediately or are you there?
Timely intervention is really important to see those moms ideally within 2 to 3 days if there's a problem. Don't you agree, Olga?
Yeah.
It's really crucial to get them in quickly because they go home. If things aren't working, they get worried, and what's in their cupboard just sent out by their formula company or OB practice, right? Right. You know, there's a can of formula, right? And that's when, not all the time, but frequently things start to go south, right? Mm-hmm. It's so much a confidence game. We are building mothers' confidence introducing them to motherhood and teaching them to trust their bodies. And that takes a lot of time.
Yeah, our initiation rates are good, but our long-term rate sometimes is not as good as we would like it to be. So mommies need continual help a lot, over and over again.
So how often do they call you the warm line? Because it's at the beginning, I'm sure you get a lot of calls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get a lot of calls. Some moms more than others. Some mothers call us every day. Some mothers once a week. Some, you know, once a month. Yeah, we get a lot of calls.
On a Monday, we can get 10 to 12. On a Friday, right?
Sure.
Busy time, 10 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
Weekends, Christmas. Crazy lactation nurses are carrying the phones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's really important because that timely intervention is what saves a lot of moms. We do a lot of phone counseling and triage and then pull them in if they need an appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, we also follow PMAD calls.
Yeah. Sometimes we get emergency calls on the, like they should have called 911 kind of thing. Yeah, once in a while they do that too.
Excuse me. I have a question for any one of you about family support and how do you handle families that are maybe not as supportive of moms?
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about maybe spouses or mothers-in-law or somebody who just doesn't necessarily embrace the value.
Mm-hmm. How I handle that with my Spanish-speaking moms is that if I see that is an issue, I actually have the mother-in-law or the mother there with us when we're doing the consult, and I'm trying to educate her, you know, along the process why it's so important for her, for the breastfeeding, for her to be supportive of breastfeeding. So I try to make comparisons, like I try to get her opinion on things, and once they see, and once they get a little education, it goes a long ways. They don't know. They just don't know the information or the latest information.
Yeah, and it's about educating and empowering.
Mm-hmm.
Because to be an only woman in a family that are formula feeders and decide that, hey, I'd like to try to breastfeed, those moms are the heroes.
Yeah.
Because maybe it's the uncle, frankly, who's giving disparaging comments or... some of those moms really keep in touch with us because our support helps them and educates them and empowers them to gently and diplomatically be able to speak up with their families. I'm not talking about anything more than support and diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes a long way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're starting families off, right, Olga?
Yeah.
It's not just the mom.
That's
it's not just the baby. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you both, and thank you for this information. I just have a question about, it sounds like we're doing a lot of things really well. What could we be doing better? It sounds like there's a lot of support in the six-month follow-up period, and so it sounds like with Mind Body support, winning that award in 2014, really supporting that workplace wellness policy. What else can we be doing better to support breastfeeding in this county and or in the workplace?
Yeah, that's a great question. Frankly, I'll respond from the coalition standpoint. I go to an annual summit meeting. They split them between Sacramento, public health people come there when we go annually, and then Southern California. And what's happening currently in breastfeeding stats, and those were related to the stats that Dawn talked about from 2017, is they're finding that things are leveling off. There was a lot of growth between 2000 and 2015 in breastfeeding stats, and then there's a leveling off. And what the coalition, the California Breastfeeding Coalition is targeting is people of diverse backgrounds. So people of color, people with low incomes. You know, once, as I said earlier, if you can educate and empower those women to breastfeed, give them the time and the space, that's going to drive up our breastfeeding stats. But currently, I used to know exactly the rate of women returning to the workplace in California, but it's staggering how fast women are going back into the workplace. And many of them have 6 weeks off before they're going back. Now, 6 weeks is the classic time that they used to give a woman postpartum to recuperate, you know, and get her breastfeeding going. And, that's what we always said in maternity, 6 weeks before you're healed. And those women are going back to work at 6 weeks. So that is a huge challenge. So targeting people who don't have the resources is really mm-hmm. what I'd like to see our county doing. Bilingual services are essential because I can talk mm-hmm. to a mom in my broken Spanish, and then I pull in Olga, and mm-hmm. they hear it from a very different person who frankly looks like them and knows how to talk to them, and that's what has helped a lot of our bilingual women in this county for the last 35 years. Mm-hmm. So that's my comments. Yeah.
As far as the low-income moms, in our county, I wish we would reach out more to employers, like the like a lot of my moms work at hotels, and they get upset with them if they have to use the breast pump. So somehow we could reach employment around here too. That would be a big help to our moms. Restaurants, field workers definitely, but you know, they're all afraid of losing their jobs.
Yeah, I think I echo Olga's sentiments as well. Many of our families are in the hospitality industry, and it's very challenging for them, especially if they're in food service, to stop and pump because they need to pump every couple hours, and it might be in the middle of lunch rush, and they can't do that. And certainly in the hotels, they need to get those rooms cleaned. So it's a little more challenging, and yes, they're afraid to lose their job, absolutely. And they're going back to school. I just found out today that we have a college that opened up in Atascadero, San Joaquin College. Mm-hmm. And one of our clients today told me, oh, they have a lactation room in their college, which is really, really phenomenal. I think making sure that the schools can support it. Cuesta does have a lactation room in the library, their main campus, but it's only open when the library's open. North County campus, as far as I know, doesn't have anything as of yet. Hancock, they can go into the health center, and if there's an empty room in the health center, but still, they're lugging a breast pump around, and those things aren't the most portable things to have to lug around. Yeah, and I think just a lot of our families, speaking from the low-income population, they have a huge transportation barrier. They really need help. They really need to come in, but they have no way to get there. Because their partner is working and they have the only car and they can't afford to take off work. So we get them when we can get them. But oftentimes they don't have the transportation to come in to get the help when they need it.
Mm-hmm. Just a thought. If CHC does provide transportation to clinic visits, if you spent maybe some time with CHC?
I think it's only to CHC. And I know Medi-Cal will cover transportation. And we tried with a client to set her up because lactation is a Medi-Cal covered service. It didn't work. Yeah. She didn't get transportation in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Thank you.
One more question. Just occurred to me. Have the new cannabis regulations affected your programs?
You want to start?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, from the WICS perspective, you know, certainly we do as much education as possible with the moms that we don't know a whole lot about cannabis as of yet. Just like years and years ago, it was okay to smoke and drink when you were pregnant, and we found out that was not such a good idea. And so that's certainly the approach that I take is we don't know yet, and are you really willing to experiment until we know for sure or not? But oftentimes the hospitals will get referrals from Sierra Vista for moms that need a pump. They need to pump and dump until they can test clean. So far in my experience in the 3 years that I've been doing this lactation consultation, I've only had one person who tested positive. She was using a CBD product for anxiety. She stopped a month before she was due. Unfortunately, she had the baby early. And so she was testing positive, and she did finally test clean, and she went on to successfully breastfeed that little guy. But she's been the only one out of all of them that have been told to pump and dump that have stayed with it. So it's they're telling them, you know, not to breastfeed with the cannabis at this point in time. And if they continue to do so, then there is a report made to child welfare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I add something? So as a practitioner. I think this is an extremely complicated question, and my daughter works for the California Department of Public Health up in Richmond, and one of her coworkers in the lead program that she was working in moved to the cannabis department. And I know that the California Department of Public Health, you know, the law got passed, and then the Department of Public Health had to make their own department and start addressing the needs. And I think it's an extremely complicated topic because obviously cannabis is much stronger than it was 30 years ago. And we're concerned, very concerned about the outcomes for moms and babies, but we're also walking a very fine line between shaming people. And it's swung in the direction, you know, in the hospitals where some women, I'm sure, are not disclosing their use based on fears of shame. And so we as practitioners, like anybody who in the healthcare field, you walk in a delicate balance between counseling those moms. But social workers are following anybody with a positive history. And then we lactation nurses are attempting to educate, and I pass out the pamphlets from the California Department of Public Health.
Thank you very much. That was a wonderful presentation by all. And it looks like we had someone in the audience who's actually active, Linda McClure's. She was here with her colleagues to be very supportive. Thank you for coming in and seeing the program. Okay, I think the next thing on the agenda is the health agency report by Dr. Bornstein.
Before I give my report, I'm always scribbling stuff.
Oh, you have some questions?
No, I don't have a question, but I do listen to the speakers very intently, and I always learn things, and thank you very much. And I wrote down, and I'm embarrassed to know that
I'm embarrassed to say that I don't know if the county has any kind of policy countywide in HR regarding breastfeeding. Now, I do know within our agency that we always make an accommodation, and I suspect the same is true countywide, but I just don't know if there's any kind of written policy about where, when, how frequency, et cetera. So I'm going to take that back to our county HR director and at least...
Can I make some comments?
Yes, absolutely.
Once upon a time, a coworker and I did write a policy for breastfeeding a very long time ago, Dana Ravelin and I, before there was any official policy, anything from HR like that. Now that there is stuff from HR, when they did create a lactation room in the building where my office is housed, I offered to provide support, and I was politely told, no, thank you. There was recently some other stuff that came about with the lactation room, and again, I offered my support in helping to write a specific policy and was told, well, there is a policy via HR, and no, thank you. So we don't have anything uniquely specific, just what the federal guidelines are, the state guidelines are. I know that Cooperative Extension has their own policy. They partnered up with the Breastfeeding Coalition to make a policy specific for their department. But sadly to say, the county public health department does not have anything uniquely specific to them other than what is mandated by the state.
Well, thanks, Dawn. I will get on the horn. No promises, but I can at least... I know that our HR department has been really looking at ways to be more family-friendly and with alternate work schedules, and I know that our HR director is interested in thinking about ways that we can be more accommodating of working moms, and so anyway.
Dr. Bornstein, I just heard today... for the Board of Supervisors meeting, that one of the goals that they're going to try to promote is employee morale. They're going to try to bring morale back up in the county, and I think something like this would really go a long way to help the morale of some of the young people in the county.
Yeah. Okay, with that, I'm going to go into all the diseases du jour. I'm sorry, but that's what's been occupying me of late. And yes, you do get better immunity. through breastfeeding. So not only do you need your immunizations, but the governing process at the state level is winding down, and they're having conference committees and all these things that were in the governor's May budget proposal are now coming out of floor votes at both the Senate and the Assembly. And there's a lot of good news in the state budget, and particularly around some of the disease control areas that we've been seeing increased rates of disease and struggling to keep up. And so as of today, it looked like there was some good conference committee agreement on things like enhancing STD budgets, enhancing HIV budgets. This is at the state level. It remains to be seen how much, if any, will trickle down to us. But one that will for sure, because I've been involved in a plan for a distribution funding formula statewide, and it appears that it was in the governor's proposal, and both houses of the state legislature are supporting a $40 million bump, of which only 10% is going to be able to stay at the state level and the rest distributed locally for general communicable disease work. So so that will be really helpful. And no time like the present, as I said, not only are we seeing these increases in STD, HIV, you may have seen our story about a little cluster of hepatitis A cases that has recently occurred. It is important to note that it is not part of the larger outbreaks that have been seen in other parts of the state and the nation, but it does keep us on our toes about hepatitis A can easily be spread in a common meal situation or common living situation. And so I think we're almost surely up to 4 or 5 cases today, and we may see a little bit more. But really, we're going to be looking at more expansion of our prevention efforts in that realm. Over the weekend, I got calls about 2 pertussis cases, so that's always trickling around out there. And, of course, measles has not yet come to our county, but there have now been 2 cases just south of our border in Santa Barbara County. Our laboratory actually does their testing, so it's a really nice relationship between our 2 counties, and we get a lot of information about the cases, so we know that this is, you know, nearly inevitable. We're over 1,000 cases in the nation now, and no signs of stopping. So that's in the communicable disease area, just any number of things on a given day that are popping up. Keeping our attention and our staff working hard on case investigations and contact and prophylaxis, et cetera. Today, thank you for watching. I was here for most of the budget proceedings today. The hearings went on, and for the health agency, thankfully, it was pretty quiet. I think I reported to you before, no big gains, no losses. We're basically status quo, but with the exception of more so in the behavioral health part of the health agency, stepping up and trying to reduce folks with mental illness landing in the jail facility and getting more care on the outside is an area of great where there's a great amount of activity going on and really continuous improvement. So that's been good to see. And the only other thing I wanted to mention is this coming week we are reconvening with our leads from each of the 8 subject areas from our community health improvement plan to see where each group has gotten in terms of any progress. We're now almost a year and a half into a 5-year plan. And so we're going to be meeting with all the leadership of those groups to see what progress has been made, what more support we can provide, where there needs to be maybe some modifications in the goals and objectives, and continuing to work with getting the word out to the larger community on what those goals are. We had the opportunity, myself and our communications coordinator, to meet with the Tribune editorial board, and so some of you may have seen a follow-on from that was one article dealing with the fact that tobacco is still having its heyday, and especially nicotine in the form of vaping. So at least I didn't necessarily agree with their conclusions, which was, no, we can't, you know, take on in a small community like this getting rid of all tobacco. But I did appreciate that at least the goals and objectives that we're trying to promote across a broad swath of public health indicators is getting some attention in our local media. And so we're going to be continuing to work on that issue, as well as the 15 others that are in our, as we affectionately call it, the CHIP plan, the Community Health Improvement Plan. So with that, I will turn it back over to you, and thank you. And it's nice to meet our new commissioner.
Yes, I have a question.
Will we be getting a follow-up on that, like in the fall or something, from that CHIP plan?
Yeah. So we had a meeting in February, which was aimed at trying to get community partners to support the effort toward a wellness trust. We gave a bit of an update at that point, and we plan on doing so annually. So it may not be until next February-ish that we bring the whole collaborative back together, the 100-some-odd people, and then whoever wants to join the Pied Piper. But so that's what we're planning on for sure. If we, you know, if something moves us to move more aggressively on that timeline, then we'll let you know
and
for sure.
Did we ever get a behavioral health plan component out of that?
Well, we did. We did, but that was the one that was probably the least well-developed. And so with the leadership of that group and our chairperson for the overall CHIP planning has gotten back together with that group, and they're really tweaking it to develop potentially some new goals and objectives. And we'll be revisiting that this week as well. Thanks.
Any other questions? Okay, now we can do some of the updates from the different projects that we've, liaisoned to the advisory bodies. So do we start down at that end?
With regard to the Tobacco Control Coalition, I think we should all be aware that next Wednesday they are sponsoring a three-hour meeting on working on community organizing theories to deal with tobacco. And the big emphasis is always on teenage vaping and so forth. It's becoming apparent that because of the caution of elected politicians, it's going to have to come from the ground up, from the community, and I think this is a good place to start. So I'm sure Penny's office can give you information if anyone's interested in going to that. I've worked with the tobacco control people a little bit, and they're a terrific, capable bunch, and I'm sure it'll be a really informative meeting.
The Homeless Services Oversight Committee is, we're just kind of at a wait and see at this point. There's a lot of homeless money, looks like, that it's going to come down from the state, and so we're just kind of watching the bills and things and see how things play out and how they're going to be designated, but there is going to be a lot more money coming down, it looks like, for homeless housing.
I attended the Children's Oral Health Coalition meeting on June 4th, and one of the things that they're rolling out that I'm very excited about is their virtual dental home program for elementary school children, and it's my hope that maybe they can make a presentation here at some point. They also had a presentation by a supervising public health nurse for children's medical services, so it was a really insightful meeting. The other coalition I attend is the Suicide Prevention Council. There was no meeting in May, but there will be a meeting late in June to develop a strategic plan. And there's also, it's pretty early in the year for this, but they have a out of the darkness walk that I can get more information on if anybody is interested in doing that. That's in October.
Okay. I will talk about the Adult Services Policy Council meeting that took place last Friday. There was somebody from the Community Foundation talking about the different kind of grants that are available. And it's amazing, there is a lot of money out there that some people might not know about, so maybe that's something we can have him come and speak to our group as well. Michelle Shoresman talked about the healthcare navigation and the programs we have here in our county. And then someone gave a presentation, Michelle, someone Clark, about fall prevention. And it's nice to see that there's actually fall prevention classes. There's some being held at French Hospital June the 5th through the July the 10th, 2 to 3 p.m. every Wednesday. It's in their Copeland Health Education Pavilion. So that's about falls. The other one is there was a actually they talked about some of the programs for seniors, and Sierra Vista has the third Monday of every month. They're having different programs for the seniors, more of a social, so they can share some of their issues. So that's nice to know that's going on in our community. The adult, there's a senior and family caregiver wellness day that's scheduled for August the 3rd from 9 to 12 in San Luis Obispo, the county library. So it's looking at the senior food bank, farmers markets, blood pressure screening, fall prevention, resource fair, and raffle prizes. So it's really nice to see that there's things going on for the seniors. There was also a presentation, or actually a little overview of some of the programs that transitions mental health, but one that was really good for everybody when we talked about mental health issues. It's called One Day Family Orientation Class, and that's going to be held the end of this month, June 29th, from 9 to 3. So if anyone's interested, they can always call Transitions Mental Health. So those are the things that they give presentations about.
I attended the Heal Slow Healthy Communities Work Group on June 6th, and we reviewed two main projects. The first is a 22-unit residential and mixed-use space in Arroyo Grande, which is located at 1136 Grand Avenue. It is a small parcel, but it's been able to develop with 22 residential units. It's considered high density, has great pedestrian access, has local transits, walkable to downtown, so we look forward to that proceeding. The second piece we reviewed is in the city of SLO. It's a project that was previously intended to be residential at the corner of Monterey and Toro and is now approved for a hotel. So unfortunately, it looks like that has proceeded to proceed with becoming a hotel, but we are hopeful that if there are still able to make some changes to have that approved as housing, it's a great location downtown for a lot of workers and a lot of potential housing to be located downtown instead of another hotel. However, if it is recommended to become a hotel, to proceed with some health changes to be concerned about that as well. So we'll see what comes down the pipeline for that.
And Ginger, I want to welcome you to the Health Commission. And we'll be having a in July, we sit down and plan for the next 6 months, and we look at what kind of liaisons that you would be interested in. So we will introduce you to some of the different programs that we interface with, so you don't have a report that I know, but welcome. We're moving on to the committee reports. There's no budget report. Legislative, anybody have anything legislative that they want to comment on? Community education, nominating committee. Actually, I'm making the recommendation, or our nominating committee, for the new officers for 1920. They're going to be staying the same because we have new members, but anybody who is interested, the next
year, let us know. I'm the chair of the nominating committee, but we'll be looking at other different things when we have our meeting to look at our planning agenda in July. So if anybody has anything in the community that they're interested in, please let us know so that we can add that to our list of activities to give presentations for our county. So I guess the recommendation I need to make...
I actually, since you don't have a quorum, we can't accept the slate of officers today. If we...
So we have set as, 6 out of 11?
Oh, it is 6. Okay. 6 plus 1. You have to have 50% plus 1. So 50%... No, I think
it's majority, isn't it?
No, I'm sorry. We had this conversation offline, and I'm sure. Oh no, we don't have a quorum today. Did you take action on the minutes? I missed that. You did.
Yeah.
Okay. We didn't. Yeah. So I think that you have to have one more member, since you can't split a person. Does it have to be 6 or 7? I don't know. Well, back to, why don't you go ahead and take the vote? And if it turns out that we have to redo it again in July, we'll do that.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Any abstentions? The slate is as written here, recommending Mary Jean Sage for the chair. I'm the vice chair, Jean Raymond, and the secretary is Tamar. And she's not here tonight, but does anyone know if she's had her baby yet?
Okay. Yesterday.
Yes, one of our commissioners is 9 months, so you better get on her.
So moved. So did I make a mistake about the minutes? I thought that there was no additions. No, I didn't think we had been, but we made that one correction.
You made the correction and just directed to post them.
Right, post them. Okay, does anybody have anything, even in the audience here, any perspective, future items, you know, that you know of that we can work? And like I said, anyone that is viewing this, if they could let us know, then we'll add that to our possibilities when we meet in July. No other comments? We can adjourn the meeting. Thank you so much for your wonderful education program.